going overseas now. In Iran, the day of the election, the internet was shut down completely. In the last 2 weeks, it's been slowed down, hacked, and carefully monitored. Now, if you're wondering how the Iranians were able to set up such a deliberate firewall so quickly, one person who can tell you is Rafael Rosinsky. He's a principal investigator with OpenNet Initiative. It's a university collaboration that aims to analyze internet filtering and surveillance practices. They have a new report out looking at the Iranian firewall. He's also a CEO of Siphon. It's a company that sells products to circumvent firewalls. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Okay, now how were things getting blocked?
Well, one of several ways. First of all, the Iranians for several years now have been running a number of products on their national firewall that essentially blocks access to certain sites. What that means is that if you try to retrieve, for example, the BBC's Persian service, you get a page that says this resource is not available in Iran. More recently, they've also taken to erasing records of websites. So, for example, if you try to retrieve a particular blog or something, the actual address doesn't appear anymore, so you can't get to it.
Okay. Now, but I think it's fair to say, then, that we shouldn't have been necessarily surprised by the so-called Twitter revolution or the fact that people were getting around these blocks, because they've been in place for a while, right?
Well, that's true. And also, I think it's worthwhile to note that the Iranian population, both inside Iran and outside, is quite tech-savvy. Prior to the Iranian revolution in 1979, IBM had a full division in the country, and there was a time in which Iran actually had more mainframes than any other country outside of the U.S. So this population, this Iranian population, has really taken on the challenge thrown down by it, by the authorities, and tried to get through the firewall as best they can.
Yeah, you mentioned IBM. There's been a lot of chatter lately about who exactly is helping the Iranian government put up firewalls, and who exactly is helping them stop the opposition from either getting information or getting information out.
Well, one of the bitter ironies is that although in North America and in the U.S. in particular, we have a Freedom of Internet Support Act, at the same time, it's really U.S. companies that have been in the lead in providing filtering software products to Iran. Now, we can't say whether these products have been sold legally or whether they've been obtained by the Iranians in other ways, but there it is. It's our software that's actually helping block things.
Wow. So what do you do with that? Who do you decide is the actual author of the action of blocking?
Well, I mean, it's clearly the Iranian authorities that make the decision in terms of what content is blocked. The software simply just makes it easier to happen.
What are the ways that people use to get around internet firewalls?
Well, there are several different ways. One of the most popular is using something called internet proxies. These are like tiny little bypass nodes that effectively allow you to get to content indirectly in ways that is very difficult to block. So, for example, in our case with Siphon, we send a link using Twitter, using email, using other means to Iranian users that says, press this. And if you press this, it'll take you to the Voice of America's Persian service. Now, that link doesn't say Voice of America, but that's where it takes you.
Is that how we come to hear news stories that say that people are playing various online games as a way to get out news of, say, demonstrations?
Correct. It's the attack of the ants. Basically, the more tiny little holes, the more tiny little bypasses you can create in the firewall, the more difficult it is for authorities to centrally block it.
Rather than filtering the internet, if you are a government that wants to make sure certain things don't happen, why don't you just shut it down?
Well, that's a very good point. And last year we saw exactly that happening in Burma, where the authorities were very concerned about ongoing street demonstrations, so they simply shut down the internet and the cell phone system. With a country like Iran, it's a little bit more difficult. 23 million people online, and certainly a good chunk of the economy depending on instantaneous global communications that the internet represents. So although we saw in the days after the elections a slowdown in the Iranian internet, they certainly have not taken the drastic step of trying to shut it down.
Now, have you taken a look at exactly what they've chosen to block? What surprises are there?
Well, they're not really very many surprises. They block international mass media, in particular that which comes in the Farsi language. They also block a lot of Persian language blogs. One of the interesting things is after the U.S., one of the first countries to really take blogging on board was Iran, and there are over 60,000 blogs, many of them having political content. So these have also been targeted.
All right. Talk about how technology can both work for free expression and work against it, and what we do with this double-edged sword.
Well, one of the paradoxes, I think, about the internet, which of course has dominated the policy agenda in the States, is just how insecure it is. The internet was built for resilience, not for security. And as a result, spam, viruses, and other things can pervade, and it's very difficult to find perpetrators of that. But at the same time, that very resilience of the internet means that in countries such as Iran, where opposition, freedom of expression advocates, human rights defenders want to use this wonderful technology in order to network, coordinate activities, they can do that, and at the moment, they can still stay one step ahead of the censors.
All right. Rafal, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
That's Rafal Rozinski, principal investigator with the Open Net Initiative. That's a university collaboration that aims to analyze internet filtering and surveillance practices. He joined us, by the way, from Ottawa in Canada.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.